Welcome to Roguecast, the official podcast of Rogues Gallery on Round Rock, where we talk about games, comics, and other stuff on our pop cultural radar. I'm Randy.
I'm Nick.
This is Dave.
And let's go to the show for this week.
All right, as you listen, hopefully our sound quality has picked up again because we're trying a new mic.
Yep.
And I may be echoey, but hopefully Dave and Nick sound glorious golden-throated.
Oh, yes. Like and there will be singing?
Yes.
And there will be dancing.
Yes. You won't see the dancing because it's a podcast.
It's amazing, though.
If not, we'll just add auto-tune to everything and make it sound even better.
I like it. So, picking up with news, this weekend is Gaming with Rogues, Seven Wonders Duel, March 18th, so come out for that. Then, coming up in April 23rd is our Magic the Gathering Amon Khet pre-release. April 29th is International Tabletop Day. May 7th is Free Comic Book Day. And June 17th is Free RPG Day. So, all kinds of stuff coming up. Mark your calendars.
It's very bustly.
It is. We got some news this week. Quite a bit, actually. South by Southwest is going on. That's some of it.
But everyone wants to get their announcements out there.
Just some news. So first of all, we have our domino casting. Zazie Beetz.
Yeah?
From Atlanta. She played sort of the main female lead of Atlanta.
Yeah.
She's great, and she's going to be Domino.
I think that's great casting.
Yeah, I'm excited. I'm weirdly more excited for Deadpool than I think any non-Marvel Cinematic movie. Like, it's Marvel Cinematic and then Deadpool, which is crazy.
Will you actually see it in theaters this time?
No. I will never pay money to go see Deadpool. That's just not going to happen.
You don't think you're going to go see it with Ross?
No, I don't think so.
I am not a big Domino fan. She's kind of a flat character for me.
She's a flat character. It's the same weird fondness I have for Cable.
Right.
I understand that she's not a great character for some.
They were kind of cool. They were the cool sort of espionage-y and military-ish X-Men of the 90s.
Yeah.
I have fondness for all things that include X-Force as part of their dossier.
Would you call Domino a good character?
Yeah, she's fine. She's like...
Fine is not good, Nick.
She's like a third-tier X-Men character for me.
Okay. She's no Maggot, but neither is she a Forge.
Is she better or worse than G.W. Bridge?
G.W. Bridge is definitely a nothing character. Although G.W. Bridge does get points for being one of the few African-American characters in Marvel Comics. So
it's true.
He gets a notch
up for that.
I can
picture him as drawn by Liefeld, where he looks like he just ate 30 burritos.
Because he thought they were guns, and he thought he might need them later.
What was their team name? Because Domino was part. Was it Six Pack?
They were Six Pack is correct. Yes.
Yeah, because it was like Cable, Bridge, Domino,
Weapon X.
Was it Garrison Kane?
Garrison Kane.
Those definitely sound like names that an 18-year-old kid would come up with as badass game names.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. Weapon X had a fist that could shoot out.
It's true.
Yeah.
He strangled Deadpool in the second issue,
yes,
I believe.
Yes, he did.
I don't know this actress who's playing Domino, but I looked at the picture and I was like, she looks like she could play Domino.
She's great in Atlanta, so...
So she'll be wasted as Domino.
Yes. Although, I mean, honestly, the Deadpool movie knows what it's doing with its characters.
Yeah, yeah. So. I'm sure they do.
Yeah. So this is kind of cool. We also got some interesting picks on Thor Ragnarok.
Right, right. There's a ton of set photos made their way out.
Yep.
And a few that are like, you know, I guess that would maybe be promotional shots, but most of them are sort of behind the scenes-ish, right?
So Thor's got sort of short hair and looks more gladiatorial. He's got like a shield and no hammer, I don't think, in some of these pictures.
No, he does not have
this is the part that we expect to be the Planet Hulk type stuff.
Probably. Hela, played by, is it Hela or Hela?
I always said Hela.
Hela, played by Cate Blanchett. I was a little upset that she didn't have the big cowl and stuff.
Yeah.
But we heard that they're...
Yeah,
they
she did an interview with somebody and she was
demanded
like,
it.
Yeah, she demanded, like, you know, time in the cowl and time not in the cowl. So.
And the costume looks exactly like Hela.
Yeah, it looks great.
And also, I have a couple of gay friends who have said, my sexuality is now gay except for Cate Blanchett as Hela. So there's that. Tessa Thompson as Valkyrie looks cool.
When you said, by the way, that the costume looks just like Hela's in the thing, is this like probably Walt Simonson's take, I would imagine?
Yeah.
The green one. I mean,
I
believe she might have been drawn by Kirby before that, but I think Simonson, I think, did the definitive spin on it.
And then there's The Grandmaster by Jeff Goldblum.
Yes. Another one of their eccentrics. Like, he's... What do they call the whole group that they're part of?
Elders of the Universe.
Yeah, right.
They're the ones who had the Soul Gems originally.
And in the movies have included Benicio Del Toro.
That's it. Just Benicio Del Toro.
Oh, okay. He's the only one we've seen.
Yeah. Jeff... The Grandmaster is the other big one. There are others that have been, like, Champion is a notable.
They're the guys who like to take humans and put them through tests and make them game for them and...
Well, they're immortals who took on one thing. Like, there's one who's the gardener.
Right.
But they were behind the contest of champions.
That is Grandmaster.
That's what Grandmaster does.
Right.
And that's what he did for...
Yeah, that's true. That's his main thing.
I mean, Contest of Champions, you know, that online... Or the iOS game and everything.
Yeah, yeah.
He was one of the big guys behind it, so... Right.
Well, this looks like something out of Fifth Element. It's great.
Yeah,
I love this whole casting quirky actors as the Elders of the Universe and letting them go.
But I think this movie is going to have some quirk, especially with the director involved.
Taika Waititi.
Yep.
I would like to point out that although I do not believe it has any actual links, that is it Grandmaster? Is that who he's playing?
Grandmaster.
Grandmaster, yes. His color scheme does look like that of Jack of Hearts, the obscure Marvel hero. Yes.
You think that secretly he's playing Jack of Hearts?
Yeah, I think it's a stealth entry point of a character that nobody wants to see.
I think that's possible.
I mean, I would be shocked to see Jack of Hearts show up somewhere, but yeah, probably not this, not this movie.
I'd be pretty shocked.
after the raccoon?
Yeah. Jack of Hearts may be weirder than a raccoon.
You know, I could see him turning up somewhere in like an Iron Man type thing because he has his thing was like a containment suit. They could even spin it off out of a cosmic thing. They could find a way to work it in within the parameters they've got in the movies.
Yep.
I think it's unlikely, but not wildly unlikely.
But I mean, with seeing all these shots, I would imagine that the trailer is not too far out there because it. This one opens in what? November?
This year, right?
Yeah, it's like November.
So probably around the time Guardians comes out.
Yeah, I would imagine.
I will say, although I respect that, you know, you kind of want to update looks between movies and stuff like that, that I miss long hair Thor. I feel like short hair Thor is fake Thor.
Short hair Thor kind of fits in with the comic world right now because he's unworthy, he's got the short hair.
Does he have the short hair?
I think in some...
Or is it pulled back in like a ponytail or something?
I thought he had the short hair.
Maybe, I don't know.
In the comics?
Yeah, in Unworthy Thor, I thought he had the short hair.
I thought that he had...
Only Thunderstrike from the 90s.
He has a ponytail.
Thunderstrike has a ponytail.
Yes.
I'm doubting myself.
You should. I think you're wrong.
Oh.
But anyway, I've heard this complaint. I heard some people say that that short-haired Thor is fake Thor.
Yeah. I say it in a meaningless way. Yeah. Like, of course, I'm going to see it, and like, I actually think it's probably going to be cool and everything. I just prefer long hair Thor.
Sure, fair enough.
See, that's how he's handsomest.
So, in the current run that Jason Aaron is doing called Unworthy Thor, he has short hair.
Oh, so he does.
So it is very much in line with the shots we've seen so far.
We've also got casting news on Scalped, the Vertigo book that is going to be done at WGN, of all things.
Scalped, which is sort of a kind of a crime series set on an Indian reservation.
Yeah, it's a
Vertigo book.
It was Jason Aaron's first big book.
Yep, he did
The Other Side, and then he did this. Yep. Interestingly, this is actually like the producer, the showrunner is a Native American, Sterling Harjo. He's a filmmaker, and the characters, none of us are going to know most of these characters, but the lead Dash Bad Horse, who's like the criminal who comes back and basically becomes like an undercover FBI agent for the inside the crime, the casino,
right.
Is being played by Alex Mraz, who is most notable. He was in Suicide Squad as a SEAL team guy.
Oh, okay.
But he is most notable for playing Paul in the Twilight Saga, which I believe is the head werewolf.
Yep.
but interesting. I don't know most of these names. Lily Gladstone.
I think Irene it's cool Bedard. That they're doing this, though.
But yeah, it's interesting. It's going to be... I'll be interested to see what it winds up looking like.
I couldn't get into Scalped. I feel like I'd probably... This format, I actually might prefer it over the comic.
Same. I like Scalped just fine, but I think it's going to be more enjoyable as a...
Maybe show. With some of the Aaronisms...
maybe.
Tuned out.
all right. good news for those who've been watching Riverdale, which, Nick, you up in Riverdale?
Oh, yeah, I'm okay. Caught up.
I know Dave has only seen the first episode.
Yeah, I've been kind of wanting to catch up, but just haven't found time.
I've been really enjoying it.
It's one of my favorite new shows.
Yeah, me too. It has gotten renewed for a season two.
Which is so great.
That's cool. I'm very excited about that.
I felt like that was a no-brainer at
this
point. Yeah,
it's been doing well. We got a couple notable announcements. We had that rumor, or not so much a rumor as sort of most likely that Lemire is leaving Marvel.
Right.
I think we all worried that Sewell might leave too, because he's another guy who's done a lot of indie stuff.
Yeah, he's got indie stuff, but apparently not so much.
No, because they announced two books that he's doing now, both pretty big. He is doing Darth Vader Year One.
Which sounds so awesome.
With Giuseppe Camuncoli. He basically said it starts right after that big no.
Right.
It's going to be Vader Year One. It's going to show him like building his lightsaber, coming to terms with his new assisted living apparatus, which is not the coolest way to describe that. and rebuild himself into
That's his cybernetic life support system.
Yes. True.
He's not like in an old folks home.
So it is coming out in June.
Although I would read Darth Vader Old Folks Home. I think I would read that. That would be cool.
I don't know if I would. The other thing he's doing is Astonishing X-Men, which does not have an artist attached just yet. There's a piece of art, but we're not sure who did it, and we're not sure if they're the interior artist. The team on this one is really interesting. It is it's sort of a lot of X-Force. There's Archangel, Phantom X, Mystique, Psylocke, then Rogue and Gambit, then Bishop, and then Old Man Logan sort of seems like one of the lead guys.
So it sounds like these are all the edgy people and Rogue.
Rogue's sort of become a little edgy, I think.
Rogue has become kind of edgy.
I have to say, when I heard X-Men Blue and Gold, I was like, oh, that's kind of cool. The more major teams that they've added, which have they only added this one? I thought there was maybe even another.
There's an X-Force, and there's a Weapon X thing. Yeah,
my face is falling.
You know, X-Men has always been lots of X-Men.
Not always. That's not the definition of always.
You're an old man, and there was only one X-book when you were
reading.
But you used the word always.
In my generation, we had a ton of X-books to choose from.
Yeah, and that's when it started stinking.
Always.
You had what? Uncanny X-Men, and you had X-Men, or X-Factor.
No, none of that happened until like 85, Nick.
Yeah.
When we were reading X-Men,
it was just Uncanny X-Men.
It was
New Mutants
X-Men.
Was the first kickoff, then X-Factor, and the 80s is where it started.
There's also a Generation X title coming.
Yep, that's good.
But I'm saying, Dave, it's been 30 years. I would not expect them to go back to one X-Men.
No, but I was hoping for less than five.
Yeah. I like the concept
two
of
Two or three
X.
sounded all right. Actually, that's a little high for me.
There's too many X-Men.
Now, I think they've got some... I don't think they all deserve airtime. No, that's me. Like, I think they have good creative teams on this. I think they're probably going to be good books. But my personal interest diminishes sharply.
That's fair. I've been less interested in X-Men Blue and Gold because X-Men Blue is all the all-new X-Men, which I don't have as much interest in, even though I think the art on that one looks better and the costumes look better.
I have an interest in them, and I will be very interested to see what somebody other than Bendis can do with that team.
And X-Men Gold is a bunch of characters that I only like about half the members of that team. And I want more. Like, my X-Men team is the one I started reading, which has, like, eight people in it, and it's all the people that they're never going to put on the same team again. Like, you're never going to get Nightcrawler, Kitty Pryde, Colossus, Storm. They're never going to put all those people on the same team again because they want to split them all up.
Yeah.
I think the weird inclusion of Old Man Logan on every team is a bit much.
That is a big problem for me. I want a guy
in it's
costume.
Effectively what they were doing with Wolverine. It's just that he's an old dude.
He just looks like an old dude.
Until Resurrection happens and Logan comes back.
He's there to make it look like a hobo intruded on every cover,
yes,
Randy.
Yes, exactly.
Where the photo shoot is?
I don't like Old Man Logan in any of this stuff. I also don't like Old Man Logan being in the Marvel Universe, but that's just me.
Well, you mean in the present times?
At all. I think Old Man Logan's a stupid concept.
Oh, okay. Wait a second. The concept is fine, I think, of a Wolverine in the future who's kind of tried to give up violence. Now, Mark Miller's story was not for us. But, like, you know, the basic concept, don't you think it's all right?
Yeah, I liked Unforgiven just fine.
All right. And you like apocalyptic things?
Yeah. I can't imagine a version that I want to read of that.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
I feel like I could easily have liked it. And indeed, there was even stuff in it I liked. You know, to me, it's not so different from, like, Punisher the End or Hulk the End. These are, you know, you're spinning out the sort of natural possibilities for the guys.
For whatever reason, I don't really want to see Wolverine as an old man.
Really?
I feel like he's a guy who dies young saving the world or something.
I suppose he's a guy who's always perpetually seemed like an old man,
yeah,
so I can
exactly.
get that.
Yeah. It's like it's a change of the character that doesn't feel necessary. He's always had that age that carries with him.
Yeah, yeah.
At any rate, Astonishing X-Men, this is a team of characters I like. I love Mystique. I have a weird fondness for Bishop. I really like Rogue. I really like Psylocke. I kind of have a fondness for Gambit. I don't like Rogue and Gambit together. I've never liked that relationship. But that's because Rogue is my girlfriend, and I don't like him horning in my action with his crazy French accent and blowing up cans of beans.
Yep.
But at any rate, it's a good team, and Charles Soule's a good writer. So I'm kind of looking forward to this. We also have... there's a new trailer for Injustice. Injustice 2 that's hitting in May.
Oh, I haven't seen that.
They're getting a little more into the story.
Yeah.
And it looks like basically Superman's getting broken out by baby Green Lantern. There's some weird stuff going on.
They're like, we're making a new game. We need you.
Because Green Arrow's back, even though he was killed in Injustice.
Interesting. Wonder if that's time-topping stuff, or...
I don't know.
I mean, it happens in superheroes, but I would expect them to kind of hold on to their edge in Injustice.
Yeah.
So maybe it's time-hoppy stuff. I don't know.
Flash is having regrets about all the things he did because he was part of the regime.
Yeah.
And then they show Reverse Flash. They show Dr. Fate, of course, who I think is lining up against Batman.
Yeah.
It's interesting. Some of the continuity stuff doesn't quite line up with what we've seen in the comics. So I'm really curious what the story's going to be, but the trailers keep looking good.
And they're launching a new comic
tie into it.
Tomas Taylor working on that?
He is indeed.
So you would hope that they would at least be respecting what he had done in the comic.
Well, he's the one sort of writing the game, I believe, so yeah.
Right. I hope that is the case, and that we're just seeing, like, you know, that some of the unexpected characters showing up that they concocted some interesting reasons for.
I would imagine with the inclusion of, like, you know,
Dr. Fate
and but also
there could be some magical
time traveling with, like, you know, the Reverse Flash and all the craziness. There's probably reasons.
Yep.
Yep. A couple interesting things just from a retail perspective. They have just announced D&D Beyond. Did you guys see this?
Is this the software?
Yeah. They're doing a set of digital tools for D&D, basically. It's official D&D. They've outsourced it just like they did with the 4th edition one. We don't know much about it yet. It's going to have character generation software. It's going to have, like, being able to pull up spells. Stuff like that. It's going to be on tablets.
This was a... has been a somewhat more difficult task than you might think, and I think what I would say maybe the last two previous D&D settings.
Yeah.
Did they have didn't they in 3rd edition they had like the Dungeon Master's Toolkit or
yeah,
whatever?
Yeah, they did. They made something, and then the
4th edition I thought there was like they had a decent toolkit, but you had to like subscribe to
4th edition was more or less integrated. Like you needed that to build all the characters.
Right. But you also didn't you have to like subscribe to the digital equivalent of Dungeon Magazine or Dragon or whatever.
They changed it. They made it originally it was something you could buy and then it became a subscription model. But what I've heard, this is just a rumor, is that they're somehow combining both. Like D&D Beyond there will be some kind of subscription fee as well as a price you have to pay to get the like the newest rules and stuff, which seems crazy and greedy to me.
Right.
Yeah.
Unless it's maybe, you know, really really cheap or you know the premium thing is not something that you'll feel compelled to do.
Right.
But it'll just be like for people who play a lot.
If it's $1 a month of subscription and $5 or $10 for the book, then maybe.
Right.
But that's not the way these things usually go. At any rate, it looks interesting. There's not much to it just yet.
Yep.
But it is interesting to see them doing it. There's also a bunch of third-party stuff out there now because anybody can build an app.
Right.
I use an initiative app on my iPad that somebody built.
Yeah.
That's sort of system neutral.
I remember hearing recently from some of our Games Workshop players, mm-hmm. our Warhammer people, that there's an app out that's that I've heard is really quite good for, I think, specifically Age of Sigmar, mm-hmm. the fantasy stuff. And so I have a feeling they're getting a better handle on these, and this could be a pretty big thing.
Yeah. The other thing that's really interesting is Marvel is apparently going to be running ads for comics before their television and movies.
Yeah.
Like attaching it to the movies and that kind of thing.
That's pretty
big. And
it's
going to be pretty notable. Like, they're going to run an ad for Secret Empire.
Yeah.
Like they're going to try and drive people into comic shops, which everyone's been saying forever they should do.
Yeah. Yeah, and the only reason, like, I understand that there's to some degree that they can a little bit write off the comic side other than keeping their IPs alive
mm-hmm.
And generating content for movies and toys and games and stuff. I mean, I get that the money isn't there, but I just feel like the more people you have kind of drawn to the comics, the more people who are going to be kind of like plugging into the deeper cuts of the movies, you know, that it would help the other products too.
Yeah, I agree.
Like people... You know, when I think about it, if they had advertised the Old Man Logan graphic novel, you know, how many, I mean, it's doing great already, but like how many more people might be out seeking it?
Right. finally, we have three trailers that dropped, and two of these movies were shown at South by Southwest this last week.
Yeah, people be out seeing them.
The big one probably is Wonder Woman's origin trailer.
Yep.
The third big trailer for Wonder Woman. And I liked this trailer a lot.
Yeah.
I'm still really skeptical that DC can make a movie, but DC needs to make... Wonder Woman needs to be great for me in order for me to care about DC movies going forward.
Right.
Like, this for me is their last shot to get me.
What if it's very good?
Then at least I will... Very, very good might be acceptable. But if it is on the level of, well, it's got some good moments, then I'm done with DC movies.
Well, what about quite good?
I think the action looks good. I love Gal Gadot as Wonder Woman, I think.
She looks good.
She looks great. Steve Trevor, Chris Pine's looks good. And the humor, that looks like they're integrating the humor into this one.
That is both a sense of worry and also something I kind of like. Like, it looks like the lighter tone that I like from Marvel movies is maybe in there. But I also worry, you know, we saw that with Suicide Squad. All the jokes were in the trailer. And also, sometimes the jokes seem to be trying a little too hard.
Right. A little bit, but...
So, I'm not willing to give them credit for it just yet, but this trailer was the first one I saw that I was like, okay, maybe I'll like this.
See, I liked the previous one notably more, and this one was just... It was fine to me.
The previous one had more slow-motion action for me, I think.
I think I thought it looked pretty cool.
Yeah.
Seeing her, like, break that gun across her back and doing all the slow motion slide and the lasso stuff.
I may have been scarred by Zack Snyder to immediately be triggered by slow motion.
I grew up in the watching the Michael Mann at the dawn of slow motion in the 80s, and so I was gonna say
slow motion is not a bad tool.
I've seen that Sam Peckinpah slow mo, and
yeah.
When it becomes a crutch and Zack Snyder uses it constantly, it becomes
anything Michael else. Michael Bay does it too. If your movie is good.
Yeah. It's okay. If your movie sucks, then it's like, oh my god.
Then it's just a longer sit in the movie.
Right. Just like,
run the whole thing at 3x speed.
Please, yeah.
That might improve 300.
Watchmen is probably way better if you watch it at 3x speed.
Benny Hill
speed?
Watch
it in 20 minutes?
Play the Benny Hill theme?
Yes.
Yeah, they showed more of Wonder Woman as a kid in this, so obviously we're going to get some early...
I'm just imagining Rorschach at high speed. Kind of
so you saw more of Wonder Woman as a kid.
Yeah.
I can't remember what all else you saw that was new other than a little bit more talky-talk.
Well, it honestly looked like it was incorporating a few things from the Legend of Wonder Woman graphic novel that they have out, which I thought was pretty cool.
Or vice versa.
like what...
I mean, just their stuff as a kid. I mean, it looked like the training and things like that.
But that's been, like, part since, like, the... I mean, I don't know if there was a specific way the training happened, but, like, she was trained as a kid and, like, in her teens and stuff as far back as the George Perez stuff.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
So.
We also have two more trailers. Edgar Wright, who is doing a new movie called Baby Driver, which is not... with Edgar Wright from Shaun of the Dead, Spaced, all that kind of thing. It is not a tie-in to the Boss Baby cartoon. It is not about Baby Finster driving around a bunch of gangsters. It is not even about Minnie Driver's kid. It is, in fact, a kid. It is, like, maybe 20s. He has some kind of weird thing where he can't... He hears, like, a low-level... not beeping, but like a...
Oh, it's like tinnitus or something kind of thing.
He's got a low-level thing going on in his ear, so he like listens to music all the time. He's this amazing driver. He works for
And when criminals. Randy says amazing driver, you're talking about like getaway driver
yes,
type of guy.
Yes. He works for criminals as a driver, and he meets this waitress, and then he's getting dragged into one last job. And his name is Baby.
Yep. What is the movie that came out a few years ago with Ryan Gosling?
Driver.
That's the one about the driver.
This is not a prequel to that.
Is this going to be more like Transporter, which was all about the guy who drove?
It is like that, actually.
Or the BMW short film.
It has
like that.
It definitely had an indie vibe to the trailer that reminded me more of the driver, whatever it was.
Yeah.
Drive. Though that had these sort of, it was kind of indie movie with bouts of ultra violence and. I don't know, some kind of subtext or something.
I didn't love Drive, to be honest. Yeah, I saw it, and I don't really remember any of it.
I thought it was okay. I didn't even like it.
I liked Albert Brooks as a mafia guy.
I literally remember none of it.
I did like Albert Brooks as a mafia guy. This one looks... you know, what's interesting is, like, it doesn't look like Hot Fuzz or Shaun of the Dead.
It looks more serious. I mean, it actually looks, if anything, like Guy Ritchie stuff.
Right. I think that's what it looks closest to.
As I recall, Dave, you're not the hugest Guy Ritchie fan in the world.
Correct.
Although you are looking forward to King Arthur.
Sort of.
I saw the trailer for that. I liked it.
But I like Guy Ritchie. I like Edgar Wright, and I like good car stunts. Yeah. The chase stuff in this looks pretty great. So I thought this was a really good trailer. I'm looking forward to it. Also, it's got John Hamm and I forget who all else is in it. John Bernthal, other Johns, presumably.
I have not seen this trailer, so I need to watch it.
And then also they did the trailer for this, inspired by the Oni comic Coldest City. Mm-hmm. They've renamed it as Atomic Blonde.
That was the Charlize Theron one.
Yeah, did you watch this one?
I didn't get a chance to.
Oh, man. Red Band trailer for this. It looks like a female John Wick. Oh,
okay.
Except there's a big lesbian sex scene, which I don't think is in John Wick or John Wick 2. I haven't seen John Wick 2
yet. No, that's missing.
But there's a big lesbian sex scene. There's a brutal stairway fight.
Probably a little bit of shades of... what's the Korean movie that Daredevil TV show ripped off?
The Raid?
Nah.
The Raid.
No. The one with the stair, the fight with the hammer, Nick. You and I saw this.
They made an American version of it with
Spike Lee.
American
version.
Crap.
Why can I not say the name?
None of us are remembering it.
Old Boy.
Old Boy, yes. Yeah.
And
yes.
Those of you who are just yelling at your radio can stop now.
It got through. It came through in time.
We heard it.
Anyway, yes, I think that, I mean, it's not like that was the only movie to ever do kind of gritty, stylish violence but I think there has been this trend in movies that would normally probably be more like slicker violence, almost like Bond movies used to be, where they've been kind of bringing up this kind of more brutal sort of side of things.
Yeah. There's also, she's a operator looking into the disappearance of these spies. It's got a little bit of Warren Ellis or Greg Rucka vibe to it to me.
Yeah.
I'm curious to see it, and like I said, the fight stuff looks great. The action stuff looks like a lot of fun. I hope the story's good.
There's something about the tone on some of these movies that's weird to me. Like when they go like where they're like very slick in some ways, but then like kind of like indie ultra violent in others. It just doesn't always sit right with me. Hmm.
I really liked this trailer.
It seems like I've generally heard people buzzing about it. I may well be the odd man out on this one.
It's got to be better than Anne Flux.
That's true. It does have to be, by definition. All right. That wraps up news for us. We'll be back in just a second about comics for the week. We are talking comics for Wednesday, March 15th. And I'm going to start off this week because for me, it's Donny Cates week. Local Austin author.
Yes.
Not Austin Arthur.
Arthur the Drunk, played by Dudley Moore.
I was going King Arthur.
Okay.
But maybe there's a link. Maybe Arthur the Drunk comes back, and pulls a sword from a stone, becomes King Arthur.
And I went with Arthur the Kids Book.
Yes. At any rate, none of those things.
Randy, you have not picked a lot of Star Trek comics over the years.
I have not.
What drew you to this one?
So as I was saying, Donny Cates, guy who's also writing my other pick, and who has become... He's one of these guys I think is going to become a favorite writer of mine. So he's got a new book this week. It's a one-shot. I know he's been doing these deviations that are sort of like what-ifs for their various properties.
For the IDW stuff.
They did X-Files. They did My Little Pony of all things.
Yes.
So this week it is Star Trek Deviations, which is listed as a one-shot and was solicited with a pitch of what if the Romulans made first contact
instead of
the Vulcans. That is not what happened, and Donny Cates has a text piece in the back as to why he chose to deviate and why he sort of did a different thing.
He deviated in the Deviations comic?
He did. And he says, I started writing this script on November 9th, 2016. You can probably guess why he then decided to write a story about sort of the resistance and hope and that kind of thing.
Yeah.
And this is great. It was not at all... I was expecting it to be kind of fun, but maybe, you know, gritty and little dark.
It is some of those things, too.
It is some of those things, too. But it's also got this uplifting, hopeful bit to it. You know, like, when you're in these sort of apocalyptic worlds, the guys who bring hope sometimes can really bring hope.
Right.
And so, basically what this is a universe where somehow The Romulans have erased the Federation and have convinced all of humanity that the Romulans have always ruled humanity, that they were brutal, and that, Romulans uplifted them from their brutal their brutal past.
This is a who controls the past controls the future kind of thing.
And this is sort of the crew of the Next Generation, sort of these more gritty post-apocalyptic versions.
I kind of like stories.
Trying to find the truth.
This is one of those stories where sometimes I think there's no particular plot motivator behind it, but it's as if the characters are almost destined to come together in some way, even in like in a world that would otherwise not see them their paths crossing with the Federation stuff.
So I don't want to give away exactly what they're doing here, but basically it opens with a Romulan warbird chasing down this little like jeep looking thing, and a guy on a horse with like an eye patch who's narrating the thing.
I think you should say what Geordi's deal is.
Okay, so yeah, I am going to say what, because Geordi's driving. He was born in Romulan prisons. He's sort of super smart, and he found Data's head and wired his eyes through it so that he can use it to see.
He's just wearing a blindfold. He does not have his traditional visor.
Right.
But he's got, like implants that allow him to see through Data's eyes. So he's literally carrying around Data's head the whole time, like Perseus carrying the Medusa's head.
They also, aboard the Jeep with him is Worf, who was a guard who sort of has turned pacifist now.
Yeah.
Which is an interesting take. And I won't spoil who the rest of them, but the rest of the crew does show up one way or another. And it's basically a raid on a prison to get someone and to find the truth about what they think is some hint about the Federation that existed. It is a one-shot, but it ends on a very cool moment, and it says, to be continued, ? So I'm hoping that means that Cates is going to follow this up.
Like, they've left the door open for a kind of an ongoing alternate universe thing, or another miniseries, maybe.
But even if they don't, it's a great, fun one-shot. As we noted earlier, I have sort of a fondness for post-apocalyptic storytelling, which it definitely is.
You also like the getting the team together storyline.
I love getting the team together storyline, and this is definitely that.
Yeah.
And I love what ifs. So this really hits me where I need to be, and it's really interesting, really fun. And if you like someone sort of seeing someone who clearly has a fondness for material, like he clearly loves and knows the Next Gen characters, and putting them through their paces and doing some different stuff with them, I recommend giving this one a shot. I really liked it.
It's also good if you like headless Data stories.
It's true. And there's not enough of those, I feel like.
That's right.
Dave?
Don't call it a comeback. all right. I'm picking a book here I haven't picked in, I think, over a year, maybe. This is the ongoing Archie comic that Mark Waid has been writing. And I fell a little bit out of keeping up with it, but I decided to just randomly jump in here with a new issue. It began with a funny page, and I felt like I was going to be onto something with this issue. Archie is trying to tie a tie, having trouble with it, and in their ridiculous, slightly over-the-top way, they show him, literally accidentally wrapping his face up, and then he, shouts out for his dad, and while his dad is helping him get the tie on, his dad is muttering to himself, he's like, I swear sometimes you're the mailman's son. but there's actually kind of a little bit of a deeper thing at work here. What you have here is, it seems like Betty has been away, or no, Veronica's been away for a while, and so Archie's been pining for her, and he's catching up with her. It's like she's been out of town for, the summer or something like that. And they're catching up on a date, and meanwhile, shows how couples, there's two stories going on in this, and they're both about couples not kind of seeing what's going on. They are kind of have fallen out of sync with each other, Archie and Veronica. Meanwhile, Betty is on a kind of a sort of friend date with I guess he's kind of the nerdy guy, Dilton.
Yeah.
I don't remember what his deal is, but he looks like he was probably the kind of nerdy dude with glasses in the old days and is probably a more of a modernized variant of that now.
Okay.
And he's pining for her, and she's only thinking of Archie.
Mm-hmm.
Only the thing is, they end up going to this car show thing, and it turns out that they weren't really connecting. But suddenly, he's like a science nerd who's really interested in cars, and she's got mechanic chops in this. So they suddenly start bonding on that, but it's like they're not seeing their bond, or she's not letting it happen. It's one of those things where when we were watching The Flash and Barry met up with who's the computer chick from Arrow?
Felicity.
And we're like, oh man, his chemistry with her is actually so much better than it is with Iris at that point.
Mm-hmm.
And there it was, I think, the show writers. Here it's kind of more about how people sometimes don't see it or won't let themselves see it. Anyway, there's other stuff going on in here. There's a great subplot that has who are the redhead twins?
The Blossoms.
The Blossoms hiring Jughead to look into something for them, some family drama stuff, and they kind of want to hire him as an investigator and pick up his burger tab for 2 months as a result, as an offer. And the way that plays out is actually really awesome. So the subplot was good. Both stories with the stuff with Archie and Veronica and the stuff with Betty and Dilton were great. And they're like the stories when they're at their best, there is actually a little something more serious going on under the surface, and it was a great issue to come back on.
His art was particularly nice.
Pete Woods.
Yep. I forget what do we know him from.
He did Robin for a long time.
Oh, okay.
Right.
He's done a bunch of stuff.
So yeah, this is issue number 18. It does promote that it is an all new story arc on the front. So yeah, I'm recommending Archie number 18.
Very cool.
New.
I'm gonna go to the DC universe for a minute and pick Batwoman number 1. There's a lot I like about this, but I think what really strikes me is that this is sort of a globe-hopping new thing with Batwoman. She has a yacht that she goes on that she's turned into her sort of personal bat cave.
A bat yacht.
It's a
We've
bat
never
yacht.
Seen that.
The bat yacht.
So, and she has her own Alfred, and then it's Alfred's daughter.
Elfrida?
I forget her name, but
forget that Alfred has a daughter.
He doesn't. This is new and made up.
Oh, okay.
I mean, this was done in Snyder's run, and it was created, and they've utilized it well.
Is she also a butler?
No, she's a spy. She's SAS.
Okay. All right.
Which her
I was a little worried, like it just... That seems like almost indentured servitude or something like that, if you have to have a whole generation of families butlers.
When she first showed up, she was basically hot... you know, kind of aghast that her father was wanting to be a butler to some pampered rich boy
right.
until she found out that it was Batman, and that led to other things and led her to get into
the
service. So she's sort of attached herself to Kate Kane.
Yep.
And they're sort of looking for weapon smugglers who are using weaponized venom.
Is she working
like
a little bit almost like her Oracle or... I mean, yeah. Alfred also, too. Alfred does backup stuff all the
Oracle,
time, too.
She's Oracle. She handles, like, transportation and weaponry and all that other stuff. So she's sort of her right-hand man. And
she also makes sandwiches.
And I think this writing collaboration between Marguerite Bennett and James Tynion is really, really
working
well.
Out.
I think the story is fun. The action is great. Steve Epting draws the hell out of it. And
now, like, whenever I see Batwoman stuff... I like the art looks amazing, and but
she
it actually looks
computer.
It looks kind of it always has like a sort of more serious look. So you say fun. Now is it?
I think the idea of sort of a glow popping, you know,
but it's
story.
Not, it's not a light tone.
No, it's not a light tone. It's definitely
that's
more
what
serious.
I was trying to figure
it's
out.
It's definitely more serious. But I like the notion of glow popping Batman. I always liked it. But if you incorporate with Batwoman into that, it works just as well.
Because I like Batman occasionally doing that. You know, like all the Ra's al Ghul stuff is kind of does that, but I also like him as a Gothamite.
Yeah.
You know, as like he is the city's protector. So this is actually kind of I think a good role for her
and
to set her apart.
There's
a little
also
bit.
Some you know backstory to you know a year that she was sort of missing, and on sort of a like a Madripoor kind of city, sort of a den of thieves, and it sort of incorporates that.
Is this sort of Green Arrow Island thing? Are we going to get
into
some flashbacks?
Kind of a little bit like that, but definitely it sort of parallels with the story that's going on right now. I just thought it was a really, really interesting first issue, and I love seeing Steve Epting play in the DC Universe. I don't think I've seen that
before. I don't think so either.
And it works really, really well.
What's your backup pick?
My backup pick is DC Adjacent. It is Wildstorm number 2.
Yep.
And I have a fondness for Grifter, so when he's on the cover...
Looking so manly with his shirtlessness and his gun ready to fire.
Yes, that's true.
Heard me.
No, but so I was excited. He is in here. I feel like Warren Ellis writes him pretty well.
He did justice.
And I feel like he doesn't write him as his normal Mary Sue character. He's not Transmat. He's not Elijah Snow. He felt more...
No, his Mary Sue character is one of the female leads from Skywatch.
Yes.
I mean, there is definitely at least one or two
characters. There are, but I was glad to see that Grifter wasn't
Grifter's
one of them.
Grifter's not, no.
But I think this is interesting. I like their takes on the Engineer as sort of this woman who's damaged and has incorporated these, like, alien objects into her body, and she can't really doesn't want them and doesn't and it's like to control.
Sort of, it's sort of the defining event that launches everything. Like her, yeah. her putting together this suit puts her on the radar of these two competing intelligence agencies, puts everybody on notice that something's changed. She's like the defining event, just like the white event was for like the new universe. Right. As a reference nobody understands.
I also really like the notion of all these sort of warring companies, the IO, Skywatch, and what is the Wildcat? Who does Grifter work for? Marlowe. Oh, it's
Halo.
Halo,
yeah.
And all three of these things, and they're sort of trying to checks and balances between them. And
yeah, the sort of covert warfare thing that was definitely the defining part of Wildstorm.
Yeah,
that's right up Warren Ellis' alley. He does a good job.
And
here.
Zealot is back into it, and you kind of see who she is and her dealings with her boss.
I will say
looks like Jenny Sparks.
The one issue I have, and I think you're probably right. The one issue I have with this is Warren Ellis is definitely playing cute, and I think to some extent, and maybe it's because I've read all the Wildstorm stuff that it bothers me a little bit, but
yeah.
I can't tell who everybody is, and I don't know if that's like a flaw, like he's writing for people who've never read this stuff, and you wouldn't be constantly thinking like, well, who's that? Maybe the characters are perfectly well-defined.
I mean, I read a lot of Wildstorm, but it was never something I was like dedicated to.
Yeah.
But I can recognize characters. I mean, they do a glimpse of Voodoo, and they do all these other things, and I just like what he's doing with this. I feel like there's a really interesting story that he's crafting.
It's a pretty good distillation of what Wildstorm is at its best, yeah.
Yeah, and I'm excited to see where they go. They're setting things up for an interesting confrontation.
Yep. Dave?
I pick all issues of Kill or Be Killed, and this is no exception.
Have you picked every issue? Or did I pick one?
Except for I think you picked one or two.
But we have picked every issue.
I might have thrown you one just to keep you happy.
You mean like I threw you a bunch of Captain America Sam Wilsons?
They're really good too. This is Kill or Be Killed number 7, and it's a bit of a break from the norm, actually. I can't really say this would be a great issue to come in on, even though it would. It is effectively kind of standalone or sets up a new storyline, but it is the start of a new storyline. And it's something I don't think either you or I expected.
No, not at all.
But it was very well written, and as I think about it, I start to think about why they might be doing it. And what happens is this issue is not told from the perspective of the lead character for the last 6 issues. Now, it's only 6 issues in, so that's not completely weird. You know, the next arc would be a place to explore things.
Yeah.
What this is about the girl Kira, who is his kind of on-again, off-again girlfriend and on-again, off-again girlfriend of his roommate. They have a kind of complicated, unwieldy relationship, and this gets into her life quite a bit. Her past, all the way from when she was a kid, told in an interesting way. It's you know, it begins with a series of photographs showing people from her family like a photo album that her mom kept of family members who died, and so she's kind of giving you a little bit of a glimpse of some of these sort of tragic lives, and you realize she's actually using this to talk. She's talking to her therapist, and now, before we get into anything else, what goes on in the issue, which actually most of it is kind of really interesting character building stuff that, you know, I kind of can't get into. It's more something you have to read.
Well, they call the book What Kira Sees, and it really is like we're deep diving into this character who's been sort of a supporting character at this point.
Right. And I think part of it is that Brubaker probably doesn't want her to be just a girlfriend character.
Right.
But I think also part of it is probably her story is probably going to very notably intersect with the lead guys. And you kind of get some sense of how that might happen in this issue. There's some painful stuff in here. As always in this issue, in this series, there's some kind of brutal emotional material.
Yeah.
And I say brutal in a good way. It's well-handled stuff between the girl and her sister, Kira and her sister, Kira and her mom especially, who's like in a hospital and is clearly ailing. But is kind of, she's like on drugs and
She'd be illin.
and is kind of uncomfortably frank with her daughter.
Yeah.
And then there's an ending scene that's very memorable and again, fascinatingly weird and uncomfortable.
Yeah.
And definitely sets up what I think is going to be some major developments. Anyway. I thought it was a really strong standalone issue that surprised me, which is kind of cool. The series has a very straightforward premise, and so I sort of thought I had its number, and I guess I'm pleased to see that I don't know what I'm going to get out of the book. And when it's always as well-crafted as Brubaker, though, you know, there's a certain confidence you can still always have.
Right.
Randy, your backup pick.
I also want to say, by the way, it's unusual for us to have picked every issue of 7 issues of a book. That's
right.
That sort of speaks to how well we all.
Yeah, like you wait for the stinker one to show up, and it doesn't.
Do
we
know if this is sort of going to be like all their properties and do about like 25 issues?
I would presume it will. That seems to be the speed they work at.
Okay.
So, I am picking the third issue. I picked the other two of God Country. Donnie Cates and Jeff Shaw's new Image book.
It's like almost halfway to the Kill or Be Killed pick record.
It is. It is. this is the story of the old man who had dementia and found a sword that is all swords, and restored his mental acuity, all this kind of stuff. It's also about his kid and the kid's wife, who are adult children, and there's some good stuff in here about he's saying, no, he's been restored, but this isn't what he was like when he was a kid. He was kind of more of a jerk, and this is more of he's trying to deal with his dad. And they've also got a granddaughter who, there's a kind of a hilarious scene where the sword basically tries to talk to the granddaughter and scares the crap out of her. And she runs back in the house yelling, and the sword's like, I'm not accustomed to speaking with children. which is a fun little moment. But this is where the god of death, this sword comes from the god of war, and the god of death comes looking for the sword. So there's like a big zombie army that surrounds the house, and
that's a good scene.
It's really cool. The sword is trying to use its blade powers to protect them. Their god of death is really creepy, and this is just sort of fun action, and sort of urban mythology in the same realm as Birthright, of course, jumps right out to mind, a Preacher, that kind of thing. And third issue, just as strong as all the other ones. Great character work, great designs, really nice world building. I'm really excited to see where this one goes. I did get an advanced look at this, so I've read all three of these issues prior to this.
Yeah.
So finally, I am at the point of being able to wait and go, what happens next? And I'm very anxious to see what happens next.
Like all the plebes.
Yes.
Irene, I have a question. I don't think there's like a direct correlation, but like, where does it relate to, say, the urban fantasy of Dresden Files?
Dresden's a little lighter, I think.
Okay.
Dresden's a little sort of wackier. It has
some dark moments. Yeah. It's not as constantly sort of darker as this.
Well, and Dresden's also, it's about a guy on his own and, the concordance of different mages and that kind of thing. This is definitely more of a good
personal,
old boy.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, more of a personal family tale.
Right.
So I would say that's the big difference.
Okay.
Also on my list this week, American Gods number 1, which is the adaptation of the novel that is soon to be adapted into a TV show. Dark Horse is doing that.
They've got some, aside from being adapted from Neil Gaiman, it's got art that's with breakdowns by P. Greg Russell, who like worked on any number of award-winning Sandman stories, and painted over by Scott Hampton, who's a really talented painter.
Very pretty.
It's really nice looking.
And there's a lot of my favorite Marvel books came out this week. Ms. Marvel number 16 is particularly some of those great emotional moments that book does so well. Sam Wilson, Captain America number 20 is dark as hell.
It is. Randy and I are liking it, but like we need some hope.
I still love this book, but I need a win. Star-Lord number 4, I think this is going to wind up being a miniseries. I'm going to relaunch it. But Chip Zdarsky's Star-Lord, where he's basically working as a bartender and at the bar with no name, he goes, this sort of delves into, they create an older villain who was like a cat burglar. They give his origin. Then they're also dealing with like obscure guys like Diamond Head and the Shocker. And it's got a little bit of that Superior Foes of Spider-Man vibe to it.
Mm-hmm.
Highlander American Dream number 2 is another good issue. I think they're doing some prequel stuff for the first movie.
Still holding up decently?
Yeah, I'm really liking it.
Nice.
U.S. Avengers number 4 is a weird focus on the Red Hulk. And Daredevil number 18 continues the story of what happened to Daredevil that caused him to put his identity back in the box, how he did it. And it is all a story of his San Francisco era when he's dealing with the Purple Children and they're using the Purple Man as a scary as hell bad guy.
I think Daredevil should go around to every person on Earth, maybe magically because of Doctor Strange, and ask him not to spill the beans on his
identity. What if that's all it is? He just gives him a card and says, please, if anybody asks, tell him I'm not Daredevil.
They're like, okay. All right. Yeah, sure.
Amazing Spider-Man 25 is one of these big, giant $10 issues. It's got, 10 different stories in it. I've read a few of them. They reestablished Clash, they've been working on for a while, as sort of a hero for the people kind of thing. And there's a Marvel Sumsum story, but and there's also a new take on Dr. Octopus that I really liked. But the main story is Spider-Man and Mockingbird teaming up to go after Norman Osborn, who is sort of hiding under other identities. And it's really good. It has a surprise appearance by a character I'm very pleased to see again. And it's sort of Spidey doing spy stuff, which I've really liked. So this is a good jumping back on point if you haven't been reading it. I really liked this, and I like they're making Norman Osborn really scary. I've got a bunch of trades. Wolverine vs. the Marvel Universe has a bunch of different stuff. Wolverine Venom with Sam Keith, a really great Wolverine Spider-Man one-shot that was written by Christopher Priest, the Wolverine Daredevil that has, I believe, during the Innocenti's run, and has Rick Leonardi art. And then it opens with a annual with Mike Zeck art that is Cap'n Wolverine, which is one of my favorite stories. So lots of good. If you're a Wolverine fan, this is a really good trade. The Excalibur Epic Collection, which has the one-shot and the first few issues of Excalibur, which was Claremont and Alan Davis at their best.
If you want to see the X-Men in England.
This is really good, and it's the team I like. It's got Nightcrawler and Shadowcat and Phoenix, and then Captain Britain and Megan, so it's really fun. Damned Volume 1, which is Prohibition Crime crossed with Demons from the guys who did Sixth Gun. This was a book they did before Sixth Gun, and now they're going to pick it back up again. So they've got a $10 trade collecting all the previous stuff. The Standees Punch-Out book, Heroes of Power, that is all the women of Marvel.
Cardboard cutouts, paper doll style.
Captain Marvel, Miss Marvel, Squirrel Girl, Hellcat, Medusa, Spider-Woman, Thor. There's a lot of cool stuff here. Honestly, I kind of want to pick this up. This would be a cool thing to have on a bookshelf. And then finally, a collection of JSA, The Golden Age, James Robinson and Paul Smith's sort of Watchmen-esque take on the...
Silver Age?
The Golden Age Heroes.
Golden Age Heroes, right. It's right there in the title.
Of DC. And sort of what happened after the war and sort of going in a more realistic direction is like...
Right, there's some very dark things are happening, but there's kind of... They have to rally for a final sort of adventure.
Yeah, there's a big bad that's a really great reveal. This is a story that I think could easily have been up in the Watchmen echelon. Like, people talked about it in those terms and just kind of got forgotten.
Yeah, like Starman of the 90s, it's a little bit out of sight, out of mind sort of thing.
But it's great. I'm glad to finally have it in hardcover because I have all the single issues.
I would also heartily endorse it.
Dave, what else you got?
I have a quick question for you, Randy. Yep. For Excalibur, since I never read that.
What?
I've never read it. Why does Megan not have a code name?
I think just she doesn't have a code name. I don't know what you want.
I don't know.
She's
like,
a fairy. She's
she doesn't believe in code names.
Doesn't believe in code names.
She should be like fairy, ex fairy.
Because somebody already taken Wild Child.
let's see. What have I got? There's a new Warhammer miniseries called Warhammer 40K miniseries called Revelations.
Yep.
That picks up right on the heels of the previous one. So they're kind of telling a bigger ongoing story here. Let's see. I've noticed, I don't know why lately, but it seems like I've had a few people have been picking up Headlopper.
Headlopper, the lopped heads. Something like that.
Yeah. All right, thank you for the non sequitur, Randy. With an in-joke that only we know.
That's not an in-joke. I don't think that's a joke at all.
Oh, fair enough.
Just nonsense. Just nonsense.
With a spare move, you gotta sing.
Yeah, I gotta sing.
We got the new mic and everything.
Yep.
Headlopper is a very cartoony artist comic fantasy series, and I just want to mention it's the part of a new storyline, even though it's, I believe, issue 5 technically, but it's the start of a new story. So if you have been hearing some of the buzz on that one and want to check it out, this is a good one to come in on it.
Yeah.
And lastly, also speaking of issue 5s, I believe this is the finale of Monsters Unleashed.
It is.
I've not had a chance to read it yet, but it seems like people have been warming to this series as it moves along, and I imagine there's some cool stuff to be had in here. I'll be curious to see what things it paves the way for. Like, I was wondering if Elsa Bloodstone is going to become major.
They're doing an ongoing. Monsters Unleashed ongoing with Kid Kaiju and Elsa Bloodstone.
Oh, okay. Well, there we go. But yeah, if there's any other status quo change-ups beyond the launch of that. But that's cool. And I think that's it for me. Oh, I did want to mention that there's a new printing of the hardcover of Providence Volume 1. That is the Alan Moore's, the third part of his Lovecraftian series that began with, like, not Neonomicon, but... There was another one.
I don't remember, because I don't think I read that.
Neonomicon included Neonomicon and whatever that previous one was.
Yeah, that's right.
But anyway, this is basically the final chapter of his Lovecraftian outing. There's going to be a few more hardcovers in the collection, but it had been out of print for a while, so when it came out, I don't know, 6 or 8 months ago or something. And now you can get it, so you should probably get it before it disappears again.
Nick?
Yeah, I've just got a few more. I Hate Fairyland number 11 sees Gertrude attend a D&D kind of expo, sort of a convention that they have. In Fairyland, yes.
Okay.
So if you can imagine her in that sort of space.
Wreaking havoc at a convention.
Yes.
Do the fairies indeed... Do they play
Houses and Humans or whatever?
Houses and Humans?
I'm... Sort of, but they also have, like, their own sort of barbarians that are kind of like the... And, you know, they're selling weapons and things like that.
Sure.
And, you know, you can imagine. The 19th issue, or the third part of the Superman Reborn story arc in Superman.
This one's been selling out, and unfortunately, they don't seem to be doing a reprint on it. I don't know why they're not doing more for it.
But after sort of the revelations of the last issue, some big stuff happens here.
What is it?
I'm not going to tell you. That's okay. You have to read it. So, yeah, definitely.
This is why I couldn't be
reading.
A spy. What are the secrets?
Just tell me.
17th issue of Mighty Thor, which continues the Thor, or the Asgard and Shire war. Sees
who wins?
You know.
Actually, my real question is this: in Thanos, when he took on the Imperial Guard, it was a really awesome dust up.
Yes.
Do we get some kind of decent fighting in this, or is this more of a political war?
Well, I mean, Jane Foster Thor is dealing with sort of the two Shire gods at the moment,
like the literal incarnation of their gods.
Shire
okay.
and K'3.
Yes.
Oh yeah, yeah, that's right.
And at the same time. Odin's brother, was it?
Steve.
Not Steve.
Clark.
Not Clark. I forget his name.
My brain
wants to say Kerr, but that's wrong.
Jodin?
Are sort of embarking on taking on all of Asgard, and you get to see some cool fighting there.
Okay.
Including also the destroyer armor, which is fun.
Yes.
Batman number 19, which continues the I Am Bane story arc, as Bane sort of takes a look at all of Batman's villains and sort of deals with them. Number 2 of Super.
That's
Science.
Very helpful to Batman, actually. That sounds like a good
kill
thing.
All his villains.
Yeah, you'd think so. Second issue of like Super that. Sons, which sees Damian and Jonathan Kent sort of team up, doing sort of mystery stuff while, you know, getting some help with Lex Luthor, from Lex Luthor.
The Lex Luthor who's somewhere between the good and the evil these days. We don't know what he's up to.
All-Star Batman number 8, which is, I guess, another series of, in the series of one-shots they're doing. This one's focusing on Mad Hatter.
Who's the artist on this one?
This one is art by Giuseppe Camuncoli, and there's a backup story by Frank Avia.
Giuseppe.
Okay.
Yeah. And then Uncanny Avengers number 21, which continues the battle with Red Skull that they've been doing for quite a while. I'm still enjoying a lot of what Jerry Duggan has brought to this book, though. So that wraps it up for me.
All right. That wraps up our comics talk for the week. We'll be back in just a second to talk about a movie and a game. So this weekend, I threw one of my game nights. Neither one of you bastards came.
Yeah.
As is the usual. But other people, who are my real friends, came.
Yeah.
And we played games.
I hope you had a good time with your real friends.
I did. I had a real good time with my real friends.
Too bad they're not here to podcast and back you up.
Where are your real friends now?
They're all in Canada, okay?
We're only here because Randy's paying us.
So the game we played, we played a bunch. The new game I played was Batman Almost Got Him. Which is a small, I want to say 10 or 20 bucks, something like that.
It's like it's like $14.95.
Yeah,
it's
famously based on the Batman Animated Series episode that everybody loves.
Yeah, which is a game where the villains are all playing poker and talking about their tales of how they almost got Batman. And it is revealed, spoilers for a long, old animated show.
Yeah, 20 year plus.
That Killer Croc is in fact Batman, and that he was trying to find out where, I think, Joker stashed Catwoman.
Right.
So I'm curious, how do they take that and put it into sort of a game?
So I thought this might be kind of love. You know, they did a Batman love letter. I thought this might be one of those love letter or werewolf type games.
Right.
Sort of
very light party game.
Light party game. And it is to some extent, but there's more to it than that, and I was pretty happy about that. So basically, you get, it's a 5 to 8 player game. Like, you cannot play it with less than five players.
Okay.
Because you need the interaction to really make it work.
And it does have some kinship with the werewolf type games where, you know, like some people know who some people are and who the villains are and who Batman is and all that stuff.
So one person is playing the dealer and they will be dealing out the cards. There's a full on poker deck.
Okay.
Everybody has a five poker cards. But the dealer is the only guy who knows who Batman is.
And is he the dealer for the whole game?
Yeah. The deal, you'd have to. You can't switch out.
Gotcha.
So the dealer sort of facilitates. And I played the dealer the first time we were trying to learn. It's a hard roll, by the way. we switched out a couple times. But basically what happens is everybody gets a face-up card that says who they are, which is, I can't remember how many villains there are, but there's quite a few. You know, one round, somebody was Clayface, then they were Ventriloquist, then they were, like, Harley Quinn. And each role has a once-per-game ability you can use. So I was Mr. Freeze, and once per game, I could discard a 3, and it would prevent a blackout from happening, and something like that.
What are the blackouts?
The blackouts I'll get to.
Okay.
So basically, everybody has a hand of 5 cards, and they also have a secret role, and the secret role could be Batman, which means that your goal is to take out either 2 or 3, depending on how many players there are, subdue 2 or 3 people during the blackouts, or there was Catwoman, whose goal was to basically get people to think, once she had her hand of a full house, to get people to think she was Batman and accuse her, because then she wins.
Mm.
And then there's also, like, there's one that was Homicidal, who basically would subdue people during the blackouts because, you know, they would thought, it's like the Joker just shooting someone because they thought it was Batman, that kind of thing. There was Crafty, who, like, when you get a flush, you can give everybody an extra card on the next turn. So basically what happens is everybody goes around, you get one card, you can either pick it up from one of the discard piles, or you can grab a blind card. You go down, you back down to 5 cards. You're trying to build a hand based on your secret role, which could be 2 of a kind, 3 of a kind. Batman, I think, needs 2 of a kind in order to subdue a villain. Once everybody's had a round to go around, whoever the brains is, which is a role that moves left every turn, can make an accusation about who Batman is, and everybody votes on whether or not they think it's Batman. If they're right and it's Batman, the villains win. If they're wrong, the villains subdue that guy, and it helps Batman because he's got one less guy to do. And then you call a blackout. And the dealer says, okay, everybody close your eyes. And he knows who Batman is. But he goes around to each player and basically lets them show if they can activate their secret ability if they want to by, like, pointing at the player. So, like, if you're the protector, you can point to 2 players and protect them in case Batman tries to subdue someone.
Huh.
And if you're the healer, you can bring somebody back that Batman has subdued. And so you go. He goes around, and if Batman can subdue people. And so you go around, everybody makes their choices, and then he says, okay, blackout over, but open your eyes, and he describes what happened. He's like, okay, you were subdued, you were almost subdued, but somebody was watching, you know, everybody draw a card. And so from there, you're trying to work out, okay, well, we know what all the roles are, so we know somebody here's the healer, we know somebody here's this, we know that maybe there, since there were 2 subduels, there was a homicidal guy, and you're trying to figure out who's who and who Batman is before Batman takes down enough people.
Okay.
It's more complex than expected, but it sounds like complex in a pretty cool way.
Oh, yeah. It's really fun. I actually really enjoyed it, and the little nods to Batman, like all the different characters, and you can definitely get into this by sort of role-playing and having some fun. We had a Harley Quinn who really got into it, and that was kind of fun. And you're also, it's very encouraged to be a social game where you're sort of talking and trying to figure out, you know, get people to give things away. And you can tell people sort of what your abilities are. Of course, they've got no reason to believe you.
Yeah.
You can lie freely.
Mm-hmm.
So it's an interesting sort of social game. And once you get the hang of it, I would say it takes a couple of games. Once you get the hang of it, it's a blast. And for a like fairly cheap game, it seems very replayable.
Interesting. That's cool sounding.
So I really liked it. Nick, I know you're going to give us your non-spoiler take on Kong, King of Skull Island.
Yes.
What's this Kong of Skull Island?
Kong of Skull Island, I think.
Kong Skull.
Or maybe it is called King of Skull Island.
I don't know.
Regardless, it's a King Kong movie.
Yes. It's King Kong, it's Skull Island, it's a movie.
It is. My non-spoiler review is, go see it.
Okay. Right.
No, but it's just a fun action movie. I might akin it to sort of a popcorn film because it's very crowd pleasing. But
that's what people said about Peter Jackson's. But I had bleeding from my eyes afterwards.
It is okay. I will say this: it is a million times better than Peter Jackson's. Although I do kind of weirdly want to revisit Peter Jackson's just for fun.
It's not without its merits.
I liked Peter Jackson's at the time, although I've gone off it.
The cast of this is great. John Goodman, Samuel Jackson, Brie Larson, Loki.
Brie Larson plays King Kong, right?
Yes, okay. Of course. So I think
John C. Reilly.
John C. Reilly, who does an amazing job.
Hallowed be his name.
That's true. In some ways, best character. No, but there's a lot of fun to be had. A lot of monster fight. So,
Yeah, I saw that even from the trailers that they showed, you know, there's other creatures on the side.
Yes, there definitely are. I felt the monster effects were fantastic. Hmm. I love the soundtrack. And then the notion.
Why do you love the soundtrack?
Because it's 70s music.
That's something I was wondering about. Yeah, it's just orchestral. There's.
Oh, yeah. No, it's definitely set in the 70s. So, nice. You know, into Vietnam era. So.
Yep. Great era for music.
Yes.
Not a great era to be in Vietnam.
No.
70s were a great time for music.
That's right.
So, there's a lot to like, and Samuel Jackson does a fun job as their sort of leader. I don't know. It has a lot to love about it, and not a lot to dislike.
So. Got some questions.
Okay.
How's the CGI in Kong?
Good.
Pretty convincing?
Yes, much better than I was actually expecting.
It's pretty big.
I feel like Nick's being interrogated. Like you have a hot light on.
No.
Well, let's do it. Turn on the hot light. Click.
No, I mean a lot of like CGI. I think this is sort of on the level of Jurassic Park.
Okay.
Where they know enough and that it's
they don't get so showy that you're just like, okay, I'm just looking at a video game cutscene.
Correct.
All right. Got another question for you. Tom Hiddleston's in this, right?
Yeah.
Boring.
Not boring per se, but his character is not unlike Drake from The Uncharted. There's not a lot of meat to the bones. He's kind of a man of all men.
Right? Is he a scoundrel?
No, he's not really a scoundrel.
Drake's a scoundrel.
Yeah, Drake has a little bit more going for him, honestly.
Yeah. Yeah, well, there were so many kind of like character actors that looked like they might be chewing up the scenery a bit. I was not sure if this was one of those slightly boring leading guy movies. It can't be a good movie.
I feel like he's sort of kind of just one note, where a lot of the other players get to have a little bit more fun with their roles. Even Brie Larson doesn't get to do an amazing amount of things. I like what she brings to the table.
And my final question is, do you think... is there any special reason why they chose the period piece, or is it just kind of it definitely is something I hadn't seen before, the Vietnam-era kaiju.
There's a reason for it.
Oh, interesting. I kind of assumed it was just an affectation so they could play some cool 70s music and just have an interesting different visual.
No, there's reasons for it. Multiple reasons.
Is he a communist gorilla?
Yes, he is a communist gorilla.
At the end of it, Randy, he discovers the hippie movement, and he's weed-smoking King Kong.
And they're like, hey, long hair, and he's like, yeah.
That's true.
But it felt like just a really good action movie.
Yeah, so. I want to see it. I think I'm going to probably try and catch it.
I would also like to see it at some point. All right.
Whatever it's called.
Yes. Kong, Skull Island, King...
King Skull of Kong Island.
I think
Island.
It's called Kong Skull Island.
That sounds right.
I don't know.
There's no way to know.
If only there was some kind of database of movies online.
Whatever. Someday.
All right, that wraps it up for us this week. We'll be back next week with more. And until that time,
Yo-jo.
And that'll wrap it up for us this week. As always, you can drop us email with topic suggestions, things you want us to hear about, or just comments on the podcast at roguesgallerytx@gmail.com. Follow us on Twitter at roguesgallery. Check us out on Facebook. Check out our website at www.roguesgallerytx.com. Check us out on Instagram at roguesgallerytx. And if you want to help us out, go over to iTunes and give us a 5-star rating and a little review. We'd very much appreciate it. And we will be back next week.